roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Mountain's Edge, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. And I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz. All right, co-host, what's up?
What up?
Not much, man. This is going to be an easy one, Goz. We only got seven fights to recap off of UFC on ESPN plus 34. That's right, folks. These cards are usually 12 is the standard number. We've seen 10, but we've also seen 14. In fact, earlier this year, I could have sworn we saw 15. That's the record. This is less than half of that. Seven fights went down yesterday. We're going to go over all of that. We'll give you the bonus information. We'll give you the all the pertinent information from the event. So buckle up, folks. It is MMA Junkie Radio, the weekend edition.
Damas y caballeros, hablemos MMA con Danny Segura.
Hola, amigos. Danny Segura here. Just wanted to drop in and tell you about a new show coming to MMA Junkie. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish-language podcast dedicated to all things professional fighting. On this show, we'll be covering the biggest news and topics of MMA, plus highlighting the most relevant stories happening in the growing Latin American scene. Hablemos MMA will also feature interviews with some of the best fighters, coaches, personalities, and experts in the game. You can find us every Monday on your favorite podcasting platform, starting July 27th. Talk to you then.
Well, Goz, like I said, we're going to fly through these. UFC on ESPN plus 34 took place last night. And I think the only way we can really put it in perspective is for me to give you a little timeline of everything that went down. It's going to take me about a minute and a half to read all this, but I want everyone to understand exactly the nightmare it must be for every one of these names you'll hear. Their coaches, the matchmakers, I suppose everybody that has a say in all this, you know, when fighters are added to posters or subtracted from posters or, anything that they may have had to do along the way that involves them and promoting themselves on a card. So check this out. This is the background that I read regarding this card. It said, a heavyweight bout between 2010 K-1 World Grand Prix champion, former Strikeforce heavyweight champion, and UFC heavyweight championship challenger Alistair Overeem and Augusta Sakai is expected to serve as the main event headliner. A women's bantamweight bout between UFC women's flyweight champion, former, should say, it does, Nico Montano and Julia Avila was originally scheduled for UFC Fight Night Lewis versus Olenek. However, due to Montano's coach, John Wood, testing positive for COVID-19, the bout was rescheduled for this event instead. In turn, it was announced on August 29th, so 1 week ago yesterday, that Montano herself tested positive for the disease, and the bout was pushed back to UFC Fight Night, Holm versus Aldana, which takes place in October. And remember, Aldana also went through this.
A lot.
A women's... I just got started. A women's flyweight bout between Maria Moros and Montana De La Rosa was scheduled for this event. However, Moros was forced to withdraw as she was unable to secure a visa due to travel restrictions related to COVID-19 pandemic and was replaced by Viviane Araujo. A lightweight bout between Kama Worthy and Otman Azatar was previously scheduled to take place earlier this year at UFC 249. However, the event was canceled in April due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The pairing has been rescheduled and was expected to take place at this event. In turn, the pair was then moved to UFC Fight Night Santos versus Teixeira for undisclosed reasons. And let's not forget, Goz, Teixeira is already out of that one because of COVID. A women's flyweight bout between Mara Buena Silva and Mara Romelo Barella was briefly linked to this event. However, promotion officials rescheduled the pairing for undisclosed reasons, and the bout is now expected to take place 2 weeks later at UFC Fight Night Covington versus Woodley. I know that one's on September 19th, 1 week before my birthday, and UFC 253. A light heavyweight bout between former interim lightweight champion, A light heavyweight bout between former interim light UFC light heavyweight championship challenger, holy cow, Ovince St. Preux and Alonzo Menifield was scheduled to take place 2 weeks earlier at UFC on ESPN Munoz versus Edgar. However, the bout was removed the day from the card the day of the event, as St. Preux had tested positive for COVID-19. So that's why the pair was moved to last night. A women's bantamweight bout between Macy Chausson and Sejara Eubanks was scheduled for this event. However, Chausson pulled out of the fight for undisclosed medical reasons and was replaced by Carol Rosa. Rosa pulled out on September 3rd due to her complications related to her weight cut. Eubanks was expected to compete a week later at UFC Fight Night Watterson versus Hill against Julia Avila. It's now Watterson versus Hill, folks, because Teixeira is out of that fight versus Santos. So they got promoted up to the main event. A bantamweight bout between Ricky Simon and Brian Kelleher was scheduled for this event. However, Simone's cornerman tested positive for COVID-19. He was forced to withdraw from the event. He was then replaced by perennial newcomer Kevin Natividad, and they were expected to meet in a featherweight bout. In turn, Natividad was pulled from the matchup the day of the event for undisclosed reasons, and he was replaced by fellow newcomer Ray Rodriguez, who weighed in as a backup on Friday. And if you recall, Ghost, we saw Ray Rodriguez on Dana White Contender Series.
Mm-hmm.
What a fucking nightmare. A few hours before the event, American Top Team teammates Thiago Moises and Marcos Rogério de Lima pulled out of their respective bouts at lightweight against Jalen Turner and heavyweight against Alexander Romanov due to testing positive for COVID-19, thus canceling both matchups. Due to the many unexpected changes and last-minute cancellations, the event will took place with 7 bouts. Can you believe all that?
I wasn't paying attention. Can you repeat that?
Can you believe navigating all that in the hotel and running around? And you tested positive. You and your team, we got to move you to this hotel. And remember, the story is, they either try and shuffle you on a future card, meaning like in a week or two, depending on the results of your forthcoming test, subsequent test. And if not, they go, here are the keys to a rental, and they suggest that they drive back because I don't think they can knowingly put them on a plane.
Right.
So like that's just one case, folks.
I don't know how they can knowingly put them in a rental either. Like, isn't that company kind of tripping? Like, he what? When they get that car back?
You know, you're right, but maybe the deal is,
I think they tell them,
I think you can
stay here.
Yeah.
Or if you want to drive back, that's on you. And I think most of the time the fighter says, well, I don't want to just sit here. I'm going to drive back.
Yeah, and then it becomes the driver's problem. Be in that car because they should be quarantined.
Right. Not just that. Usually they don't drive alone. There's some other yokel in that car too, right? So like, I don't know.
That is interesting. We can't spend too much time on it, but the only thing I was going to say was maybe the agreement is when we return the car, we inform you what happened, and then you guys put on your hazmats and disinfect the car if that happens. I don't know. But yeah, I guess I would be pissed if I knew that I drove a car that the day before had been returned by 2 fools or 4 fools that drove across the country, and one of them or all of them have COVID.
If I'm hurt, I'm thinking, so let me get this straight. You decided to drive across the country for no damn reason, and then some way along the line, you said, I think I'm going to take a COVID test, and guess what? You came up positive. Like, it's just I don't know that there's a Frank Mirror face big enough to probably give the person handing in those keys, but they definitely deserve it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of all that, man. Maybe the UFC should just buy a fleet of cars and have people come back and just be drivers, you know, knowing full well whatever. Who knows, man? Everything I just read you is a nightmare, man. Well, what have you had it?
If I've already had it?
Yeah.
And now I'm just driving fools across the country?
Yeah, or I don't know. we're wasting time, but can you imagine all this goes that was going on? All these, you know, everything's about agreement, resend that, resend this, you know. And then let's say I'm the fighter and you're my coach, or vice versa, whatever. And you have made plans that once you corner me this weekend, next week you're going on a vacation with your family, or you've got plans, or you're cornering someone else and you've gave them their word, you know, or maybe Bellator or something. And then I come back and go, what the, you know, now I got to get someone to corner me after. I mean,
it's a nightmare.
It is a nightmare.
And at the end of the day, we were left with seven fights, and we're not used to seven fights, but you know what? I mean, we're also not used to having back-to-back cards, right? Mm. So really, seven fights to me was a little bit of a break.
They started off with two decisions, and then after that, we had five finishes. Two were in the first round. One was in the second. One was in the third. A controversial one, by the way. And then the last one finished in the fifth. So it moved along nicely. Here's who won. Hunter Azur defeated Cole Smith. Vivian Araujo defeated Montana De La Rosa. Brian Kelleher defeated Ray Rodriguez. Andre Muniz defeated Bartosz Fabinski. Michelle Pajeda defeated Zalim Emadeyev. Ovin St. Preux defeated Alonzo Menefield. Alistair Overeem defeated Augusto Sakai. The fight of the night was, there wasn't one, because they went with four performance of the nights, and they went to Ovin St. Preux, Michelle Pajeda, Andre Muniz, and Brian Kelleher. So basically, Alistair Overeem is the only fighter who didn't get a bonus out of the five that finished. Four of them got bonuses, not Alistair Overeem.
Hey, we
it was nice.
Made that complaint before in the past, right? Yeah. How come the guys, just because you're in the main event, doesn't make you that much more able to get that bonus? This is kind of them shutting a lot of people up and doing that. Because Overeem's performance, it was main event. It was decent. Yeah. I mean, you know, he took a lot of shots in that fight too, but he gutted it out. It was a good performance for him. Mm-hmm. So you can make that argument, but I think on the other ones, they just stood out a little bit more.
They now, did. Normally, Keller's choke was so quick, it was nice. And even the guys were saying, Keller's got a nice squeeze.
Go ahead. Normally the big name, when you have that situation, they go, give it to him. This is the one time they didn't. So I think we should all be okay here.
Especially when they go five rounds. And it could have been arguably 2-2. Those scorecards I saw on Twitter were all over the place. I myself said, I have Augusto winning the first two. Then I thought Overeem came back and won the last one.
He won that one in the
So I think I had 2-2 going into round five. But I also knew that the first two were really close, and it may not necessarily be that. I also thought round three, I believe, was getting close to a 10-8, but Augusto had done some work early on, so it would have been interesting to see how this played out. In fact, I don't know why I'm saying that. Junkie does a good job of collecting the scorecard, so I'll see if I can find it and share it with everybody. But starting off with Azur, good win for him over Cole Smith. Again, decision 29-28 was unanimous across the board. Araujo steps in next. She wins two 30-27s and a 29-28. Good on her. Brian Kelleher got that submission over the, I almost said tough alum, the Dana White Contender Series alum, Ray Rodriguez. Can't hold that against him. Too bad. Keller's a beast, man. No way around that. Andre Muniz, look good, man. Submission armbar, first round as well over Bartosz Fabinski. Michelle Pajeda, man, that fight.
He's looking legit.
Yeah, Emadeyev is, I mean, I don't want to say he's a title contender or anything like that, but he's pretty good, you know. And Pajeda just, I think, got in his head early. That's what happened. And I think Emadeyev just got in a position where he's like, okay, I'm going to catch you. I'm going to catch you sleeping. I'm going to catch you clowning. And I'm going to make you pay. And he didn't. Every time he had close quarters against Pajeda, you know, kind of like a duh, you know, he just basically took away a lot of what Pajeda was doing to frustrate him, which was striking from distance. You know, the speed advantage obviously was nullified, and just the pure technical. I mean, he clowns a lot, but he does have some technical skills, but he just didn't really do much of that. Pajeda just started the clown and kind of early, and I think just got in his head, and the other dude, man, just had nothing for him. Pajeda looked good. I mean, but Pajeda, let's not forget, he looked, if you were to tell me, hey, that guy's 11-1 or 12-0 or something, I'd probably believe you. But he's had his fair share of losses. I think he's only just really, really finding some sort of a stride in MMA. Putting the Diego Sanchez fight, you know, to the side, that was the illegal knee. He did lose to Tristan Connolly. He did beat Danny Roberts, but I'm still not sure if this guy really should be uttering Jorge Masvidal. I don't blame him.
I was about to ask you that.
But I'm like, take it easy. You know, take it easy. But I can't. I also can't deny that he's not exciting.
Yeah. I thought it was a great performance. I thought he looked really, really well. But the thing is, I think a lot of people felt, especially with that call out, that he took that next step of the guys just outside the title match. But I think he actually creeped up to that spot right outside those
guys.
Like
the Mike Perrys and
yeah, he's in that. Well, like I could see them maybe like I could see them giving him somebody like a Leon Edwards, something like one of those guys that keeps getting passed up, you know, at the top around that area.
Maybe.
Or one of the losers of one of these top fights. Because
Edwards,
you know,
and Neil and Ponzinibbio. Maybe Ponzinibbio, because Ponzinibbio's been gone so long, they'd say, bro, a lot of your hype's gone.
Mm-hmm. I could see them matching up against one of those
But I could see Edwards and Neil going, hold on a second, I got dudes turning me down.
True.
I'm just going to wait this out because... We'll see, man. I'm never shocked.
I feel bad that this happened on this card, this performance. Because if it was on a better card, I think more people would be talking about him today. But he kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit because the card just wasn't that great.
Yeah. Up next was the co-main event of Insane Peru against Alonzo Menifield. And in this fight... Do you want to talk about that submission? Did you see a tap, by the way?
I didn't, but I see what he saw, what he thought.
Chris Tyone, the referee?
Yeah, and I think maybe he just jumped the gun a little bit, but because it wasn't like a phantom tap. Like, it was just something that kind of resembled a tap. So I get where he's coming from.
I thought
from.
I saw some sort of a, not a tap, but just some sort of a little motion with his hand that was on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I think. I think... I think the referee saw that and it wore on him for a second. And then when he saw again the little questionable, it looked like he was trying to basically play the 2-on-1 game, basically grab a hold of the wrist to take pressure off the choke, that I think he just saw a little bit of a flutter motion. And I think he added the two together and he just said, okay, he's done. Now, that said, of course, throughout the fight, Pajeda was being dominant. And it did look like he aggressively took his back and got under that chin, and it did look like he was about to wrap it up, and that's why you won't see much disputing. It doesn't even have anything to do much with gambling in terms of, other than if you had a decision versus the finish, but it did go over 2.5 rounds. So, you know, you're gonna win some of those, and some of those are gonna go in your favor, and some of those are just gonna suck.
I think,
you know, when it comes to gambling, but the right guy won.
Yeah, the right guy won. But I think it was Cormier that said something like, well, you just can't argue it because one guy was so far ahead. And I kind of disagree with that. You know, they made it sound like,
Jersey, who cares? Rosenstruck versus Elster.
Yeah, like who cares that whether it was a tap or not? He was kind of done anyway. You never know. That's the problem.
There was 21 seconds left, so that's not a huge window. But Jarzinho Rosenstruck versus Alistair Overeem.
You just never know.
There's some late ones
so
there.
It sucks. It's not the worst one in the world. But I think you also can't just pretend like, well, he was losing anyway, so it doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, there really wasn't much to say. I think the referee probably made a mistake, but I did see a couple instances of just the hand or the fingers doing like that little flutter motion. Not necessarily like a clear tap, but just, I don't know. Like out of the corner of your eye, you know, where you're like, hey, did I just, you don't even finish a sentence, you just go, hey, did you see? And it's one of those things. And then the other guy goes, well, and then by the time you realize it's not the case, you've had the benefit of the replay. The ref doesn't. The ref has to make a decision right then and there. All right, we move to the co-main event. Vincent Peru defeated Alonzo Menifield. You know, Menifield didn't fight bad. He didn't fight bad. It's just, well, Vincent Peru, I think, out-experienced him. He just had some patience, a couple times he was getting his chin touched. He knew he had a 4-inch reach advantage. And then he was using his legs to kick both the arms and the body. So he was aiming for the head and the body. And he just slowly dismantled Alonzo Menafield. They're both big kids, and they both can hit hard. But, you know, it was one punch that it's listed as a KO. It was just a one-punch type knockout.
He could have made it worse, but he held back.
He held back. The ref did the right thing. I think this was Herzog. This was round two, and it was almost the end of round two. Good win.
I thought it was OSP's one of his best fights because he was very, very calm. Yeah. There were moments where Menafield started throwing bombs, and somehow OSP, I think one of them did kind of stagger him a little bit, but he was able to kind of get past all that, recollect himself, and just stick to the strategy that he had, which I thought was a really good one. And then finally, boom, capitalized on that shot.
He looked to be in good shape too, coming back from heavyweight against Big Ben Rothwell. So congrats to OSP.
When he puts everything together, he's a scary ass dude, because on the ground he could finish you. He's got the power to finish you on the feet. So he's a maniac, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like high 30s now. I think 36 or so, mid 30s I should say. High 30s, in fact, 40 years old. Alistair Overeem, 20-year veteran of the sport of mixed martial arts, defeated Augusto Sakai. Again, folks, these scores could have been all over the place. So I don't even know if I want to call it a comeback victory or what I want to call it, but it was impressive either way. He was very, very patient, and it was the ground game that got him there. On the feet, Augusta was busier. Alistair seemed to be a little bit more precise, but sometimes busier can get you those rounds. And that's where he was playing with fire a little bit, Overeem was. But then when Overeem got the fight to the ground, it almost looked like he was just tackling the guy. You know, like a defensive end that goes around the tackle and then just grabs a hold of the quarterback and just kind of brings him down. You know, like he was almost going to put him in a small package if it was pro wrestling. It worked. It was efficient. And then when he was on top, he was devastating. And Augusto kind of had nothing to offer other than to just block him or kind of butterfly, put his feet up on Alistair's hips, push off. But he's not agile enough to just get up. So every time he did that, Alistair would come right back. And then eventually either the round saved him or he managed to finally get up. But Augusto Sakai is just not fleet of foot. Now on the feet, again, he was busy. He had some really, really nice knees. He had some really, really nice uppercuts, a couple elbows. But that little cover-up that Alistair does, where I feel like he's playing with fire, I've seen him now put it to use and get him out of some jams. It protects his chin from hooks. Straight up the middle, you can still get him. And he was hit hard, but he was not out, man. Alistair was impressive, goes, you know. When you look at all the guys he's beaten and for how long he's been doing this, and he's won 4 of 5 in that Jarzinho fight that I referenced earlier, a fight that he was clearly winning. If he doesn't lose that, he's won 5 in a row.
Yeah, this is one of his better performances. And the thing is, like, some of the knocks on him, you know, a lot of people point to his chin. He took a lot of shots, mm-hmm. really good shots that hit him flat on the chin. I would prefer he not play that cover-up game, because I just don't think it's really smart to do that, especially at heavyweight. But they both guys had a pretty decent showing. It's just, I think the difference was when Overeem had his positions where he was dominant, he was able to capitalize better. When he was on top on the ground in his guard, those were some bombs he was dropping.
Oh, yeah.
And he made Sakai pay for those moments more than Sakai made him pay for moments where he had flurries and Alistair just decided to cover up. So he just capitalized better, but I thought it was a good performance for Alistair Overeem.
Sakai just needs to work on boxing, straight punches, those little hooks that he has, and then he's got this.
He's got the length for it.
Yeah, he's got great kicks and great knees. Not great kicks, but good kicks, great knees, I will say that. Elbows, you know, once he's in the clinch, that works. But his straight punches when he's actually kickboxing or boxing needs a lot of work. And then obviously the ground, man. A, you can't be taken down that easily. And if you do, then you better have a great guard or you better have the ability to get up. But if all those check marks, if all those boxes aren't being ticked, I mean, you're not going to get too far. You know, you're going to do what Augusto Sakai did, much respect, make it to fringe 10 or 15. But those other guys, I mean, Alistair's not even a wrestler, but he was getting them down. You know, I mean, imagine Blades and a few of the other guys that are Miocic that flat out have wrestled. They're just going to take you down with early and beat you to a pulp and then get the hell out of Dodge. Hey, real quick, goes, I did find the scores. First round, all the judges said Sakai. Second round, two judges said Sakai. One said Overeem. Round three, all of them said Overeem. 10-9. I'm mistaken here on the 10-8 that was questionable. Round four, they all gave him a 10-8 for Overeem. So going into round five, he was already drawing dead, Sakai was, on one of them. But two judges had it 38-37, so that if Sakai won that round, it would have been a majority draw.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Now, if Sakai comes back and wins a 10-8, then obviously he would come back and win the fight. But that 10-8s aren't too common, especially for the guy that just got 10-8ed. So that's where we were. That's how the scores were. I'm glad that at least two judges kind of saw it how I saw it, which was narrow Sakai wins.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy for Alistair, though, and I hope he gets a really good name next, because dude, it's just murderer's row at heavyweight. You know, he needs a good, solid name, and let this just be his last run.
Well, if he wants to run it back with Jarzinho, I mean, he might feel comfortable about it because, like I said, he had some success. But Jarzinho might be like, hey, I kind of beat you already. You're in my rearview mirror. He may or he may not. I don't know. But the other ones are tied up. You got Miocic versus Ngannou. And then you have Blades versus Lewis. So I don't think he's fought Volkov. I suppose he could fight Volkov. I'm not sure if Volkov already has a dance partner. I'll check real fast. But Overeem is, I mean, he got a lot of props, man. A lot of people were chiming in on social media, giving him his praise because, again, he's been doing this for so long. There's a lot of fighters that can say, I was in college, I was in high school when this guy was fighting. I remember this, that, whatever. Volkov does have a fight. He has the big ticket, Walt Harris. So I suppose if Volkov wins that, it's coming up on October 24th, then maybe Reem might want to entertain that or just be in a fill-in mode if something else falls off. But again, 4 out of 5 with his only loss being Jarzinho Rozenstruik. He's looking all right. Sakai just needs a lot of work. He just took a beating, take at least 6 months off, and then come back. All right, folks. It's time to catch up with Ricardo Lamas.
The Sneak is a true crime podcast from For the Win in USA Today, and this season is on a surfing champion whose life took a violent, tragic turn.
Within 30 seconds, they're both dead.
The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is out July 29th, wherever you get podcasts.
And there he is, the aforementioned Ricardo Lamas, former WEC featherweight, longtime UFC featherweight. What's going on, my man? Good to talk to you here. Coming off that big win over Bill Algeo.
Yeah, it's going good, man. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure talking to you guys.
Yeah. Man, I saw Pride yesterday, you know, Alistair Overeem and WEC, man. I still love covering all these fighters that we've seen that started elsewhere and had notoriety and then, you know, continue to come to the UFC and continue the success. So I've always cheered for the WEC guys. Bill Algeo, man, he came to fight.
He did, yeah. I think he had fought like 2 weeks before that, so he was in fight shape. He was still ready to go, still in shape. Just really happy that he took the fight. He made weight. There was no drama, no COVID. There was a second there where I didn't think I was going to fight.
You know, I wanted to ask you, did you shed a tear when it wasn't Ryan Hall? You know, how much of a camp did you put into just Ryan Hall, you know, who's kind of built differently and he's definitely coming to do different things to his opponent on a fight night? And I know we had probably badgered you to death on this one, like leg locks, you know, all that stuff. But even before you got to Bill Algeo, when you heard, I wasn't even sure if you had the option to just maybe, hey, wait a few weeks and then it's you and Hall, or how did that work out where you got Algeo?
So I found out, I think it was a week about a week before the weigh-in. So it was like that previous Friday. I was actually finishing up like one last medical that I had to get done. I had to get like an EKG done. So I was at the doctor's office. I was getting that done. And then on my way out, I noticed that my brother had called me. You know, my brother that helps manage me, he talks to the UFC. And there was a voicemail, and he just said, hey, give me a call when you get this. And right then I knew something was wrong. So I called him back, and I said, what happened? You know, and he was like, Hall is out. And I was like, great. So at that point, he said that, you know, he was still talking to Sean. He didn't really know any details. There were a few other guys that were interested, but none of that kind of came through. And then, you know, he said that he could text this Bill Algeo guy. And so we're like, yeah. And, you know, thankfully, first we heard he was interested and then he took it. But still at that point, there were still a ton of what ifs, like just because of the era we're living in now with COVID. And I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to get all of his medicals done on time, get his COVID test done on time, because before they flew us out, we had to give ourselves a COVID test. And they needed to get those results, and they needed it to be negative before they even flew us out to Vegas.
Now, I already touched on this earlier. I said, hey, Bill Algeo came to fight. You know, he was tough. But one thing we all kept saying that night was it was Lamas's experience. Of course, your actual skills in the cage, we all know about that. You've been doing this for a long time. I mean, you've been a contender for years. But we said his experience came into play, and he was able to make the adjustments. How about you? Talk us through the first round when you fought Algeo, what he was like. And did that, in fact, everything, all these things that we say, the media often, you know, and fans and other fighters, were you able to fall back on your experience, pair it up with your skills and any feedback, you know, you were getting from your coaches, and that's what put you over, you know, in the next couple rounds?
Yeah, you know, the first round I felt pretty good. It was kind of a feeling out round, just kind of getting used to his style. He came out southpaw, which I kind of wasn't expecting. So that kind of threw me off a little bit, had to kind of like adjust to that. I felt like I was scoring my shots. I was putting a lot of combos together, hitting him with more devastating shots than he was hitting me with. So I felt good coming out of that first round. Second round, I was feeling good until I caught that knee flush on the chin, and, you know, it definitely rocked me for a second there, but I kind of still knew where I was. For a second there, just kind of like a camera flash went off in my face. And then like I come to and he's rushing at me. So I knew where he was at. I was able to defend myself. And I was even able to scramble out of the takedown that he got right off after that. So I knew he took the second round just from landing that big knee. You know, it was a really nice, well-timed knee. And then, a couple times in the fight, I got him in a position where I thought, you know, I was in a front headlock position, and I normally finish everybody when I get there. But just like a couple little hesitations on my behalf, and I kind of just missed the timing of setting up my submission from there. And my corners were telling me, you know, don't go for the submission anymore. When you get him down, just, you know, ground and pound. That's all you need to do. So in the third round, I finally secured a nice takedown and just kind of went to work with elbows and punches and pretty much everything I could throw at him.
Then they award you, you know, the fight. You're the winner. Tell me about, I guess, that feeling at that point. You know, it a lot happened post-fight, Rick. You know, you won. You beat a guy that was tougher than you expected, not even your original opponent, all through this pandemic where you've shared with us business open, business closed, business open, business closed. We've seen a lot of fighters kind of like be really, really emotional. And then, of course, you also had the message that you sent, you know, regarding your Cuban American, and you had a strong message towards the government of Cuba. So tell me what you're processing, I guess, at that point in time through everything that happened post-fight.
Yeah, there was a lot. You know, first of all, when you leave the fight to the judges, no matter how well you thought you did, obviously I thought I won the fight. You know, as soon as that third round ended, I stood up, put my hands in the air. I was pretty confident I won the fight. But, you know, you've seen decisions come through that you're like questioning if the judges were even watching the fight that was happening. So until you hear your name get called, there's that little slight chance of, oh, you know, like, please, please, please let them call my name. So when they called my name, it was just a huge kind of sigh of relief that came out of me. And it was just, man, just like you said, right? Like, this fight had been built up for a lot. You know, I was supposed to fight in May. COVID hits, event gets canceled. Have no idea when the UFC is even going to come back. Luckily, they do come back. They're one of the first sports to get back on TV. So then it was kind of like trying to figure out a way to train in this COVID era. And I'm sitting there like alone in the gym training by myself for that first fight up until the event gets canceled. And then I get rebooked. And then I'm still trying to figure out how to train again, right? Because things are getting a little better, but it's still risky. I got a family. I don't want to expose them. Didn't know if I was going to even go to Miami for training camp, but decided to just do it and cut it a little short and then fly straight to the fight from there when I usually get to see my family right before I fly out to the destination city of the fight. And then just getting there and still kind of having it in the back of my head, like wondering if this fight is really going to happen. You know, we saw pretty much every event, there's at least one fight that drops off because either someone will test positive for COVID or somebody in their camp or whatever happens. And we saw it on our card. You know, Ian Kutsalaba again tested positive and was unable to fight. So really, like, until I was ready to walk out, I was, like, just still wondering if this fight was going to happen. And to go through all of that, and there was just a ton of stuff leading up to this fight that, and then at the end, it's just kind of like everything locked into place like a puzzle. You know, all the pieces finally fell into place. And given that speech, to me, like, it was, if you know me, if you've heard interviews of mine before, I've always been vocal about the whole situation in Cuba. You know, growing up with my father, who was really hardcore in the underground against the regime in Cuba. Obviously, I heard stories since I was a little kid and learned about the history of Cuba growing up. And every time in school growing up, when a teacher would, like, give us the opportunity to do a project on whatever we wanted to do, I'd always choose, you know, the history of Cuba and kind of educate my classmates on that. I'd bring my dad into school and, like, he would give kind of lectures on the subject. And it's just something that's important to our family. You know, since my grandfather fought against Batista, my father continued the fight against Castro. His uncle, you know, also fought against Batista and Castro. My father's brother was involved. He was also a political prisoner. So it's just huge in our family. And I've always talked about it in interviews with, you know, when it comes up, but I never had the chance to kind of take the mic live after a fight and really give, you know, my thoughts on it. So I was like, man, you know, coming into this fight with the whole, you know, thinking about retirement thing, I was like, I got to do it now. I got to get a win. I got to get on that mic and I got to give this message out at least once, you know, before I leave this sport. And man, I never expected that I would get the reaction that I did from not only the Cuban American community, but I'm talking about people in Cuba. This message that I gave out went viral. I'm getting messages and emails from political exiles from all over the country. You know, these people that risked their lives, these people that knew friends who gave their lives fighting for freedom in Cuba. You know, my dad's movement, the 30th of November movement, Frank Pais, the Cuban Association of Former Political Prisoners, the Cuban Resistance Assembly. I got messages from, you know, Miss Elsa Morejon, who's the wife of a doctor, Dr. Oscar Elias Bisset, who is the founder of Project Amelia. And he's probably one of the most important leaders of the Cuban resistance against the regime that there is today. You know, this is a guy that was sent to prison for his nonviolent protests against the government, right? And they basically tortured him. I mean, he was released. He came to the U.S. and I actually had him at my house for a 4th of July one time when he was in town. But I mean, he would talk about just, you know, they would throw him in the pitch black dark for months on end, kind of like solitary confinement. He never saw the sun, never saw light, nothing. And they just kind of did that as a way to break you mentally, you know, to torture you. He went through all that. He was released, came to the U.S., and still decided to go back to Cuba and continue fighting again, risking even more imprisonment or even worse. You know, it's you don't put it past the Cuban government for them to kill you, you know, and make it even look like an accident, which they've done in the past with other people. So getting messages like that from these people who, you know, they basically tell me that they're like indebted to me. And I'm like, well, I didn't do anything. You know, I don't deserve any recognitions or awards. I'm just kind of speaking what I was taught my whole life. But to get that feedback and just loads and loads of messages of Cuban Americans from Miami and all over the place that were thanking me for the words that I gave after the fight. It's, you know, I don't think I could ever make a better ending to my participation in the sport than I did, you know, a week ago.
You know, it was powerful, I'll tell you that much. And you delivered it with incredible precision. You could tell you were knowledgeable on the subject. It wasn't just, you know, something that was slipped to you on the napkin. Hey, can you say this or make a comment about that? And now it makes sense. You saying the passion you've had for this since you were a kid and every chance you had an opportunity to educate, whether it was your classmates or anybody else, you know, you came forward. I loved it, you know. What did your family think? Did they know that something like this might come out? And I'm sure they must be proud.
Yeah, my dad, he didn't know. I didn't tell anybody. I was obviously, you know, thinking in my head and going over it in my head leading up to the fight about things that I wanted to say and touch on in if I were to win the fight in the post-fight interview. But, you know, my dad, he called me and it was a few days after the fight and he was like, you know, I want you to know that your message it has gone further than anybody could even expect. You know, it reached Cuba. It's circulating through Cuba. It's circulating all over social media. It's circulating through the Cuban American community. And he's like, you know, I know this isn't the only time you've done something for Cuba. Like, I've gone with my dad to protest before. I go to every event my dad puts on. And they raise money for, you know, the fight against the Castro regime. You know, they raise money for dissidents. They'll raise money to go and protest it in Washington, D.C. So I definitely try and do everything I can. But, you know, this kind of went beyond. You know, he told me that he was just very, very proud of me as a son. And, you know, that means I already know that he's proud of me. But since I was a little kid, I always wanted – you know, I always wanted to help him in the fight, especially hearing all those stories, man. You know, I'd tell him when I was a kid, I'd tell him, you know, if you ever go to Cuba, I'll be right there alongside you, fighting with you. I never knew how. I never knew that I could make an impact, you know. But now I kind of firmly believe, like, I was put in this sport to do what I did on Saturday. You know, maybe I wasn't meant to be a world champ. But and I'm not stupid. I know that, you know, my little speech after the fight isn't going to bring down the regime that's been in power for the past 60 plus years. But if I could be one spark in 1,000 sparks that ignites the fire that takes down the Cuban regime, then to me, that's worth more than, you know, 10 world championships.
And has there been any negative feedback at all, even from the Cuban Americans or Cuba itself?
Yeah, you know. Online, they're trolls of all kinds, right? And there are people in Cuba that are indoctrinated that do support the regime, that do support Fidel, and, you know, maybe people that are privileged over there, and they call us gusanos, you know, worms is what they call people that leave Cuba. So I've gotten a little bit of those, but for every one of those messages that I got probably 150 terrific messages.
Man, that's great to hear, Rick. And then, of course, we've yet to really touch on the R word. You mentioned it earlier today. And then I was tracking you all week. you're not the first fighter to have said, you know, hey, this might be it. I'm not sure. I got to discuss with my family and teammates. And I know you did a little bit of media where you stated kind of what you stated earlier, that, you know, that could be a perfect scenario for you to walk away. But it seemed like there was still maybe more discussion that needed to take place. So I ask you almost not wanting to hear what can be one of your answers, you know, because I love watching you compete. But at the same time, I think I want to see you also enjoy the next part of your life if that's what you want. You know, you got your kids, your gym. You're a very, very close-knit family guy. Have you thought about it? And do you feel like you're at a spot where you want to tell people, hey, look, I'm not done yet. I want to keep fighting. Or maybe that, in fact, was it this past a week ago Saturday.
Yeah, you know, like I said, all the puzzle pieces fell into place, and it was more than just the fight. I mean, there was stuff that happened to me during fight week that it kind of unexplainable. And, you know, I'll share the story. Some people might think I'm crazy, but maybe it'll help some people who have lost loved ones to let them know that they're kind of still out there. But if you watch me fight, you'll know that I always carry a rosary with me to the weigh-ins and during my to the walkout, you know, and I'll give it to my corner or whatever. In 2009, one of my brothers passed away, and he was living in Arizona at the time. So when we got the news, me, two of my brothers, and my dad went out there to kind of gather his belongings, see him, kind of identify him and bring him back. And while I was out there, one of the days I also had a cousin that was living out there. So we were staying with him. He kind of took us out for lunch one day, and I was in this little store, kind of like a Native American store, and they had like a bunch of rosaries, like little wooden rosaries, just simple ones. So I picked one up, one for myself, one for each of my brothers, one for my dad, one for my brother who had just passed away. And at his wake, I had the priest bless all the rosaries, and I gave, you know, one to each of my brothers, and we buried one with my brother. So that was just like kind of my way of bringing him with me to every fight, because he was really proud. You know, when we went out there, he passed away at a friend's apartment, and you know, she was like, "Are you the fighter?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Oh, he talked about you all the time." And he had like the first magazine that I ever came out in, an edition of Fight Magazine, and he had like the page creased on my article and stuff like that right after I fought Bart Palaszewski. So anyways, long story short, after my last fight, because of the hospitalization, I was kind of in the hospital and putting all my crap away. I misplaced the rosary. I didn't know where it was. And I kind of forgot about it because, you know, I pretty much only bring it with me to fights and stuff like that. So I keep it like put away in between fights. And I'm getting ready to leave from Miami. And because I had to go straight to Vegas from Miami, I'm getting everything ready to bring to the fight, you know, like my flag, and I'm looking for the rosary, and I'm tearing my house apart, and my wife is helping me look, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And I'm like, shit, you know, so I just had to leave without it and went to Miami. The other crazy thing is my brother passed away on August 28th, 2009. The day of the weigh-in when I weighed in was August 28th. And that night I had made weight. So I'm on weight. I go to bed. I wake up about 3 a.m. just because I'm so thirsty. It's really hard to sleep when you're cutting weight. And I just start scrolling through Facebook. And one of my other brothers had posted a comment on my late brother's memorial page. And so I commented on it. And then I just kind of started scrolling through pictures of him and kind of talking to him in my head and saying, you know, like, I know I don't need a rosary to know that you're here with me. And then I was like, you know, just please watch over me just one more time. You know, I just want one more win and then, you know, I'll move on from the sport. So the next morning I'm packing up my backpack, the backpack that I use every single day, right? I had it with me in Miami every single day, take it with me to the gym every single day when I go to work. So I'm putting stuff in there and the main pocket is flapped open. On the inside of the main pocket is another pocket with a zipper. The zipper was cracked maybe a half an inch. And I'm just sitting on the bed and I glance over and look at the backpack, and through that half an inch hole, I see a piece of the rosary in there. And I was like, no fucking way. So I unzip it, stick my hand and pull the rosary out, and just started bursting out into tears. But after that happened, I knew something big was going to happen in this fight. And one of my corners was like staying with me, and I tried telling him about it, and I couldn't even like talk. Like, I kept getting choked up. I was crying, and he started crying. So I've never had anything like that happen to me, especially like, just, I mean, if it was a coincidence, the same day my brother passed away, a few hours before, I'm literally talking to him in my head and mentioned the rosary that I didn't have it with me. And I just think it was his way of letting me know that he was still there. So, you know, he kept his promise to me to watch over me. So I got to stick by my word, and I'm, you know, going to hang up the gloves after that performance.
Wow. That is a lot, man. I'm getting teary eyed. All right. First of all, what happened with the story with the rosary? Thank you for sharing that. That's incredible, man. That was your bro.
Yeah.
Looking out for you. That's huge. And as far as retirement, congrats, you know, on making that decision. Congrats on a great career. More than anything, I just want to say I understand what you're saying. All the dominoes fell into place, and this is a perfect ending. So how could I even begin to say, are you sure, you know, or anything like that? Because as much as I enjoy, Goes enjoys, many people enjoy watching you fight, you know, your fellow colleague fighters, you know, you guys always say nice things to each other as well. A lot of people enjoy watching Rick Lamas fight. You're giving us some great moments. This is just one that I guess I'm just going to congratulate the fighter. I'm not even going to say anything like, are you sure? Or you know, is this 99.9? It seems like this is airtight, man. Congratulations, Rick.
No, thank you very much, man. And thank you guys for, you know, I told you before, usually MMA reporters, they'll reach out to me when I have a fight coming up, and I'm like, oh, now you want to talk to me. But you guys have always been so cool, and you've always reached out in between fights and just to see how I'm doing, or even a text just to kind of bullshit and say what's up. And, you know, you guys have invited me to tons of places, and you guys have really been the realest reporters that I've come into contact with in my whole career. So that's why I wanted to, you know, make the official announcement with you guys. So, you know, thanks for all your support over the years.
Wow, man. I mean, very touching story, and we really appreciate you coming on and doing this with us. I'm kind of with George. You know, I was probably thinking maybe there's a little piece of me that might want to go, hey, Rick, maybe reconsider. You looked really good. But, I mean, you and your brother painted a beautiful picture, and I have to respect everything you said. I'm just curious, like, had none of that happened with the rosary or any of that, did you already have those thoughts kind of in your mind anyway? And has there already been a post-fight plan set in place for Ricardo Lamas? Because we know you have your gym and all that, but this all kind of just seemed like it came organically. What are your thoughts moving forward now?
Things I wanted to do. Obviously, a lot of those kind of pieces fell into place. That whole Cuba speech afterwards was something that I definitely wanted to do. I wanted to do before I hung the gloves up, and it just exploded. And I think, you know, my gym, number one, for sure. You know, my UFC gym in Naperville I'm there every day anyway. So now I'm just going to be even more involved. There are a lot of fighters there that I work with. You know, this won't be the last you guys see of me in regards to the UFC. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to help some guys get there, and you'll see me in their corners and just give them back to the sport. But really just concentrating on my gym business, concentrating on my family. You know, I put them through a lot, with all the traveling that I would do. My wife, God bless her heart, would stay back a lot of times with these three kids, and you know, almost every day I'd have to be talking her down from the ledge, because my son is a ball of energy, and he's just really hard to kind of deal with sometimes. But you know, just making it up to them for all the stuff that I put them through with these fights. And I honestly, another reason why I wanted one more win was, especially after the last fight I had, just coming back from an injury like that, where a lot of people might have just hung it up then. I wanted to come back, and I wanted to kind of use that as a lesson that I could teach my kids later on in life. Like, you get knocked on your ass, you get your jaw broken, that's fine. You get back up and you do it again, you know, and you keep going until you get the outcome that you want. And this outcome in this last fight was more than I could ever ask for. And, you know, not many people get to end their career on their terms and just be completely satisfied with the way that they do it. So I feel very fortunate to be able to do that.
Things like what Michael Bisping and Paul Felder, Daniel Cormier do, where they're able to, you know, in Paul Felder's case, and up until this last fight, Daniel Cormier, they were still fighting and broadcasting. But a role like that seems like it would be something that would suit you. Would you ever throw your name in that type of hat where you still kind of keep a job with the UFC, but maybe as a commentator?
Yeah, I would definitely like to get into that. You know, I do a lot of work with kind of a local station here in Chicago called Stadium. And they cover a lot of the UFC events, and they recently brought me on as their, like, their analyst for you know, the UFC shows that they do. So they've gone out to fights before and done stuff like that. So I'd definitely be interested in, you know, maybe getting started with them doing that and kind of work my way up. But I love the UFC, and I'd love any opportunity to continue to be a part of it.
You know, we're used to retirements in our sport and in boxing where there are a lot of fans there and the gloves get taken up and they're put down. This one won't have that feel. But are you going to do anything on the side, any kind of ceremonial moment for you, whether it's taking those gloves and hanging them on the wall or whatever it is? Have you thought about that?
I haven't thought about that. You know, the only thing that would have made this 100% perfect was that if there was, like, an audience there. It was very strange. That was the one thing that just kind of made it a little different is, but that's COVID, man. That's 2020 for you. You know, it's been a crazy year for the entire world, and we all had to adjust to it. But if the one thing that I'm missing was an audience full of people, I mean, I'll take all the rest of the stuff that I got coming out of this fight, and I'm pretty satisfied with the way it all played out.
You got a bonus too, 50K.
That's right.
We forgot to list that. But tell me, your family and your coaches, I'm sure they probably already know. Did they have input? Was this 100% you, or did you kind of ask around? Like, how was that?
Yeah, I talked about it with my family. I talked about it with my coaches that night. And, you know, they're like, you know, whatever you want to do, we're behind you 100%. I love my coaches. You know, MMA Masters, Daniel Valverde, Cesar Carnero, they've been in my corner for a long time. My other corner was my business partner, Matt Kuchert, and he knew, like, me and him had been talking. I haven't made it back into the gym yet because I just took this week to spend with my family, so I'll be back in there Monday. But me and him have been texting throughout the week, and he was like, you know, I never really told him, but he said he knew going into this week that this was, like, going to be the final ride. And, you know, he's a buddy of mine, one of my best friends that I've had since college. We wrestled together, and I'm glad I had him there in my corner. My wife kind of knew, just, you know, obviously I tell her everything. And like I said, since my fight with Jason Knight, I've been kind of in her ear telling her that, you know, I think I should hang it up soon. You know, I just want, like, one more good performance and then, you know, go out on a high note. But you have a good performance, then you want another one and another one and another one. And I just wasn't ready yet, right, when I talked about it back then. But after this fight, that's the way I want people to remember my career, you know, this last fight. That's how I always came out to fight. I leave everything in the cage. I go in there, and you're not going to stop me unless you knock me out, you know. That's how I want people to remember Ricardo Lamas.
Do you have a top memory that you leave behind, or memories, plural?
I mean, top memory, just with the way everything played out, this last fight kind of topped everything, you know, and that's why I'm good with kind of leaving the sport on that note. Obviously, I've had tons of great memories in the UFC from, you know, my very first fight in the UFC, because that was kind of like a dream come true for me since I was a little kid. I always wanted to put on those UFC gloves, and then winning my fight, first round TKO, and then just continuing through my first fight in Chicago for the UFC, which was pretty much for the number one contender spot. My title fight, obviously. And then I was kind of a big part in helping promote the UFC in Latin America and being a part of the very first card in Mexico, in Latin America entirely. Just everything, man. There's so many highlights in my career that I'm so proud of, but I don't think anything can top this last fight that I had.
I would agree. And man, some great wins along the way. Even some guys that are still active and performing well. You know, Cub Swanson's still fighting. James Krause is still fighting. Diego Sanchez is still fighting.
Charles Oliveira.
Yeah. Jason Knight's in bare knuckle. I think he'll be back to MMA. Dennis Bermudez. I mean, there was a lot of tough customers along the way. You fought at least half a dozen fights for the WEC and then coming over to the UFC, I think 20 or so. What an incredible career, man. You really, really got to travel the world and experience a lot with the company, you know. So like Go said, hopefully there might be some sort of a role for you with them, because I think you've represented yourself well. And I think that going back to that speech, that was very powerful. But I was really, really impressed with just how seamless your Spanish is in a moment like that. I think I would forget every word that I've ever learned, but that sounded like man, what's the right word? It just sounded so like presidential almost, you know what I mean? So I was very, very impressed. But anything you do, Ricardo, you're always going to be successful because you work really, really hard and it shows. So how about the bird? Did the bird have anything to say? Did you discuss it with him?
No, my dad actually still has the bird. Every time that my dad watches my animals for me, like when I leave for camp, because it's just too much for my wife. So he takes my bull terrier Bane, and then he takes my bird Cilantro, and he loves them both. And I literally have to like fight him to get those damn animals back. So they're actually still at his house, but I'll get them back probably sometime next week.
Did you see the way that story blew up on our site? I mean, you know, when we were done talking, I told him, look, these are the things we talked about. Here's five things. I thought the bird was kind of entertaining, but the bird, I think, got us the most traffic.
Yeah, it did. That was really cool. And I'm lucky I got her back. That was one of the domino pieces, you know, one of the puzzle pieces that came together was getting the bird back, man. I would have been devastated going into this fight if I would have lost that bird.
Two more things here. And again, man, I'm still kind of like shaking a little bit just from hearing, you know, everything that we've talked about. All right. The body, how does it feel? I mean, they say you're not the same after every fight. What are you leaving behind? You know, earlier today I saw Bisping. He had the knee replacement. And, of course, we've seen what's happened, you know, with his eyes. And then there was a subsequent post where he's now walking on the knee replacement. Man, it's kind of sad to see just what the sport does to you guys that we don't get to see. We just see you guys out there thumping each other, you know. But there is repercussions to be paid in many ways. How do you leave the sport with your health?
Pretty fairly intact. You know, thank God I never really had any problems with the knees or shoulders, you know, stuff that you had to get surgery on. Only surgery I had to have was after the fight was for, you know, the fractures in my jaw. Just kind of like a reoccurring injury that I would get almost every camp was in the neck, but that I went and got an MRI done after my last fight because I was getting like some numbness shooting down my arm. So I had like a herniated C4, C5 disc, but the doctor said that it wasn't too bad. But still, every camp, you know, like when I kind of kick it into high gear and I push it a little too hard, I'd always mess my neck up. And then like a week, I'm sitting like trying to baby it and recover. So the neck is one thing that I really want to concentrate on in my post-fight career, just kind of strengthening it up and letting it heal. Because that's something you don't might want to mess with. You know, my old college wrestling coach kind of had neck problems too. And recently just had to have a surgery done, and he had like 50 staples going down the back of his neck, after surgery. And he's still like kind of turning like this. So the neck is something you don't want to mess with. And if you have any problems with it, you want to catch it early and really nip it in the bud. So I'll be working on that. But other than that, you know, just your typical war wounds. I got a lot of scars and ugly ears that I'll tell my grandkids about.
Definitely. Last thing, of course, I truly believe this is a 100% case that you are retired. Although I would like to see you and Ryan Hall maybe submission grapple in a few years, but there's going to be a lot of people that say, yeah, but is he going to let USADA know that he's out? Because, you know, Faber's still in. That's why he's able to maybe kind of dip in and dip out these last few years, and he's done well. DC pulled out, though. He goes, I'm out of USADA. That's kind of like that final for a lot of people. When do you think you'll make a call to them?
Yeah, I didn't even know I had to call them to start talking to you guys. And yeah, it makes sense. I'm going to have to call them and let them know. And that'll be hard too. You know, I've gotten to know my USADA guy. Roger is his name. And he's been coming to my house since Abel was a newborn. So he's like literally seen all my kids be born and kind of grow up while he's been coming over and staring at my junk while I pee in a cup. So Roger, I'll miss you, buddy. But yeah, I'm gonna call USADA if I have to and let them know that I'm officially retired.
Well, if he's staring at your junk, then you're at least you know, eye contact, right? You just
yeah.
Is there a story you can share in terms of like, man, this guy woke me up at 6 a.m. or he tracked me down over here? You know, have you ever at an airport or you have any USADA stories?
Yeah, I almost popped a cap in his ass the first time. He came to my house for the first time. It was like, it was the dead of winter, right? It was probably 6 o'clock in the morning. So it was still pitch black out at that time. And he's ringing my doorbell and I get up like dead asleep. And I'm like, who the hell is ringing our doorbell? So I go to my my son's room, which is right next to ours, and his window overlooks the front door. So I look out his window, and I see some dude dressed all in black, black knit cap, two black duffel bags at his side, and I'm like, what the fuck? So like I go, I get my gun, I put it in my waistband, and I go down to answer the door. And when I opened it and I saw his face, I had recognized him. So I was like, oh, Jesus. So like my wife was waiting at the stairs. And I just kind of leaned back and handed her my gun. And I was like, I know who it is. Don't worry. So she went back upstairs. And I told Roger about that story and he was laughing. So he's a good guy.
Man, I'm laughing my ass off. But then again, Rick, is this the most courteous burglary ever where he rings the doorbell? You off maybe? Or
it didn't click in my brain because I hadn't been tested by USADA yet. So I was still kind of like unaware of how it worked. And that was the first time that I was ever tested, and then they showed up in my house so early, and I didn't know. Plus, I was like dead asleep, so I wasn't even thinking straight yet. I needed coffee first.
That's true. All right, man, this has been fun. Thanks again for, you know, just our friendship. You know, really, a journalist isn't supposed to say that to an athlete, but this sport's so much different. It's so raw and organic and primal for Goz and I, who started off as fanboys and just like, oh yeah, sure, we'll do a podcast that turned into a national radio show, and here we are. And along the way, we're just fist bumping. And I'm pretty sure every journalist has gone through this, man. But seriously, you're a guy that we hope to keep in touch with. And it sounds like you want to stay involved. You're saying something about, I got some fighters, and I've seen Lazan cornering, Mike Brown cornering, James Krause, I mentioned him earlier, Benson Henderson. You see that? Three WC guys there. So we're still going to run into each other. But for now, I mean, you just enjoy your summer, enjoy your family, enjoy your career, soak it all up. But again, thanks for making that announcement on our show. So that, you know, that you thought what you thought of Goz and I, that you wanted to do that. We really, really appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem, man. Like I said, you guys have been the best. And, you know, hopefully when all this COVID stuff blows over, if you guys plan any more trips, I know you invited me before to go visit the troops and stuff. So if you do anything like that in the future, keep me in mind, man. And sometime.
Yeah, no, we would love to take you on one of those. There's a lot of times when we go on those trips where we visit the units, the different units that are out there, security forces, the firefighters, the helicopter mechanics, you know, but then there's been these times where we actually connect with a lot of the younger students. I think it's called like the leadership group, you know, and that's where we get to open up and they ask us questions. And man, I think you'd connect with a lot of those fighters because you've really done a lot. You know what I mean? And I love the passion that you have for your background, you know, talking about Mexico and Cuba. And I think a lot of people that are just coming out of like entering adulthood, some of those younger students that are entering adulthood, sometimes they haven't found themselves and they don't know whether they should express, you know, how proud they are, you know, of where they come from. Sometimes they feel like they want to just hold that in, suppress that. But yet, you know, you were telling me how proud you were since you were a little kid. And I think it would be very meaningful for them to meet someone like you on one of those trips.
Yeah, man, I would love to do it. It'd be an honor. So you just let me know and we'll make it happen.
Ricardo, thanks again for joining us now, joining us today. Congrats on the win. Congrats on a great career. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, Goes, how about that?
Man, great interview. Fun time with Ricardo. He's a guy that goes back a long ways with the show. He's always been very kind to us, and I'm happy that he's happy.
How you feeling right now?
A little sad.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. He is he's a friend of the show. He's I think he's the type of guy that we'll keep in touch with. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of fighters retire, and then we just, our paths don't cross unless they become coaches or something else. But even if he never has anything to do with MMA, if I was ever in Chicago and he wanted to meet up for a deep dish or something, I'd love to. Or if he was in Vegas, because he's a foodie, we talk food. Or just to see him, man, I feel like there'd be a lot to talk about. We covered this guy since WEC. We've covered this guy for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I was happy for him because of the way he went about it. You know, I mean, this was supposed to be Ryan Hall. Turned out to be Bill Algeo, and but he knows his body best. He knows what he's feeling best. He discussed it with his family. That was important. So all we can say is congratulations.
Yeah.
So there you have it, folks. An exclusive there on MMA Junkie Radio. Ricardo Lamas retires from mixed martial arts, and we wish him and his family all the best. And don't forget, he's got that gym in Naperville, Illinois. It's west of Chicago. It's a UFC gym. Head on down there. And if you're from that area, maybe you're looking for a gym once all these COVID restrictions are not just lifted, because they've been in and out, but when you're feeling comfortable that you want to maybe join a gym, just know that he's got one in that area. If you're in that area, or if you're visiting, you know, and you just want to stop by and visit and get a workout, that's where he's at. And folks, with that, we're going to get on out of here. Thank you so much for joining us on this weekend recap. It's been a lot of fun. Congrats again to Alistair Overeem, but even bigger congrats to Ricardo Lamas. Two gangsters, man. I love those guys. All right, folks, we're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.